You're rolling.
We always try to talk.
And we're back.
Part two.
We change seats.
Yeah, we changed seats just to shift it up.
And you put that, some pants on.
And I put pants on. Not that it was relevant before.
Well, he was in his underwear because he's a hobo.
I was, yes, I was being a hobo. I'm in my shorts. My legs are rubbing against San Francisco. What the heck?
Whoa.
Francisco. Right. So I thought maybe I'll
okay.
put.
Okay. Take it easy, JJ.
Why did I call you San Francisco?
I don't know. Maybe that's your bird there.
Yeah, I needed pants.
All right, but we're back with our. Guests.
We got our guest Amos Gill here.
Amos Gill, and we're gonna learn more about him, right?
Yeah, we did because we did everything else. I think in that.
Yeah, it was a cool stream of consciousness thing. But now we want to talk about. First of all, you are from Australia. You were born in Australia, raised there, and then you started doing comedy over there. You became pretty big over there, right?
Like I was all right.
Yeah, I mean, you said you were pretty bigger than Jim Jefferies, right?
Yeah, call it successful.
Well, there was probably a period where I was doing bigger than Jim because Jim didn't even bother with Australia.
Because he was in England, right?
Yeah, Jim was like not doing anything in Australia.
So how does that work? Is it like he wasn't? Is that a thing? Because like they embraced him after it became popular.
Yeah, but he also like started in the UK, and then because he was so crass, Australia's comedy industry is extremely
clean,
sensitive,
clean, and
kind of comedy. Have you been to the Comedy Magic Club?
Yes, I have.
It's kind of like that.
It's one giant. One giant comedy magic club.
One giant Hermosa Beach.
Yeah, except with no magic. If anyone tries to do magic, they'd be like, well, fuck, what's wrong with you, mate?
We're not that soft.
What are you wearing a cape for, you fool? but we are very soft. And so, like, Jim, I remember, like, people would be like, he couldn't possibly. I mean, he can't go on television with that kind of act. Even though we are like a convict scum nation, our comedy scene never reflected working class Australian people.
Oh, okay.
It was very like erudite. So yeah, he wasn't really like, he wasn't big there. But I started doing stand-up at law school.
Oh, really?
They have a competition there. It's like a devil's advocate competition. And it's like you start doing comedy there and you win a prize. And I won this prize for $500.
Okay.
And I was like, this is sick. I'm just going to keep doing that.
That's how you knew it.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, so I started to like focus on that.
And where was that? Because I mean, Australia, we're talking a big country here.
So. Yeah, no one gives a rat's toss, but it's like, it's a place called Adelaide, which is the middle south.
Yeah, right.
Okay, it's a small city, like 1.5 million, something like that.
And did you always wanted to do comedy? Or
100%.
Yeah, okay. Since you were little.
Like... Well, my school had a speech competition every year. And from like grade 5 up until year 12, it would be like you just had 4 minutes to write a speech about anything. And it became my thing where I would pick a topic. And it was like my Netflix comedy special where I would work on the 4 minutes.
You look forward to that.
I'd be like, at the start of the year, I'd be like, what's the topic?
Oh, that's awesome.
And I'd be like, this year's going to be sports. And then I would write jokes about like our school captain being shit at footy. And I was like, and like this teacher, I tried to watch him catch, I was just basically roasting the teachers.
Yeah.
And then I would write other jokes, not knowing they were really jokes. It was a speech and I'd read them off cue cards, but I got laughs. And it'd be like, eventually to the point where the older kids would be like, hey, it's the speech kid.
Ah, nice.
They'd be like, you got a speech for us this year, little fella? And I'd be like, that's my identity.
That's your thing. Yeah,
I do
the
speech.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, it was always held in like November and it'd be October. And I'd be like, walking around at lunch like,
big gig.
I'm like, I got nothing this year. I felt like it was like so much pressure.
Drinking milk. More milk.
And I had like my two best friends would be like, I'd always try to be funny. That's all I cared about.
Yeah.
So I'd try to be funny. And my friend would grade me at the end of every day and he'd be like, dude, you were about a B today. It was flat.
Oh, really?
Like, maths.
Oh, my.
He was like, maths.
You had the entourage.
I had like these two best friends.
But I'm glad that you got like some, like, right away, like, good, like, and be like, hey, man, today you're a little.
It's not very often that we hear the class clown wanted to become a stand up comedian.
Yeah.
Those don't.
Well,
mates
were all, but like, I know Jerry Seinfeld says that. And I think most of my friends at school were funny and then everyone just got real jobs, but my mates were all hilarious.
Me too, yeah.
So everything was about being funny. It was like
exactly
the only thing that mattered at all, like was to be a funny bloke. And then those two, that group, I'm like in the group chat right now. I get relentlessly roasted by them. They're like, dude, since you became a comedian, you're way less funny.
Right.
Like comedy sucks. Like that, they would come and watch me do stand up and they're so unfiltered. They'd be at the bar afterwards and be like, dude, everyone here fucking sucks. And they'd be like, you should quit, man. What are you thinking? Like, and it's true. Like, stand up at the start is not funny. And there's also, there was a tendency for not funny people to do stand-up. It was more like people who wanted friends in a community in Australia.
That they knew like, how to do the formula, but doesn't mean that they were naturally funny.
Yeah, it also takes a lot to be on, too. And people expect you to be the same kind of funny when you're off. And you're like, I don't...
Yeah, I'm
but
not
But it's
that
an accepting community comedy.
Thing.
Yes.
Sometimes so accepting that you're like, you end up spending time with people who need a therapist more than a crowd.
Yeah.
And so the early stages of comedy were like that. And I remember I got less funny doing stand-up because it was almost like stand-up satiated my desire to be funny in real life. And then, you know, when you start doing comedy, if you try to be funny socially, everyone's like, here we go. It's all about you, mate.
Have
you got a good one for us?
Yeah, yeah. And so you kind of had a cold there a little bit.
Become
yeah.
more dull and boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stop getting everybody's hopes up. Amos is here. He's got a joke for us.
That's the most annoying thing. It was like when people go like, so, or when they're like, earlier this guy picked me up at the airport for like the gig and he's like, so are you funny? I was like, yes. And then the guy's like, okay. I was like, yeah. It's like, because I'm tired of answering. They fucking answer that question. It's like, what do you mean?
You're not being
like,
very funny
I'm
right
not going
to
fucking do like tap dance right now.
You got to have one. Do you have a joke for when people
Sometimes I go like, yeah. And I, most of the times I get somebody to go like, laugh. And they're like, you see, I made you laugh. Or like, I'd say something and like, not even a joke, but they laugh right away. So I was like, okay, you see, I'm funny. If I'm not, but I don't have like a specific joke.
I never say it anymore, but I just run with any job and just see how long I can talk about a job I don't do.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's great. So if you're having a haircut or whatever, you're like, yeah, I work at Goldman Sachs. And they'll be like, why are you at Supercuts? And you're like, I save. I'm about thrift. I reinvest all my money.
I've got a couple go-tos. It depends on who it is that's looking for the joke, too, because sometimes...
What do you got?
Because a lot of times it's pub jokes and shitty, like...
I had one comment, or a comment, remember a comment who would say something about was strippers. Like, wait, do you ask... I don't know who somebody would, like, when they would get asked that question and be like, well, do you ask a stripper to get naked in the like in the middle of the day or something like that.
Yeah, you get offensive like that.
And something like that. And it's like, but it was in a funny way, but like, I don't remember, but I don't remember.
I used the one that Jim taught me, which was you just, as soon as someone says that, you go, you want to hear a joke? Okay, an Englishman, an Irishman, and an Australian walk into a bar and they all agree
think
you're a cunt.
A prick, yeah.
Okay. I should say that. They're like, but you're like you're Venezuelan. What does that have to do with? I don't know.
It's needlessly harsh, to be honest. It's like some kid's asking you for a joke.
That's the thing.
It's like, oh.
You ever had that situation where you're making them laugh for like a half an hour, everybody's laughing, and then they find out you're a comedian, and then it's just like, oh, well... Tell us, you're not being very funny. And you're just like, dude, we've just been laughing and having a good conversation for the last 30 minutes.
So, I did comedy at law school. That was my thing there. And I didn't want to pursue that anymore. And then I got a kids show.
But you graduated as a lawyer.
I graduated after like 10 years because I ended up getting like a kids TV show. So I went like doing quite dirty stand-up comedy to going on the ABC 3 Kids.
Really? Like hosting?
Oh, wow. I was a host of a TV show.
Oh.
And,
what's the TV like? What for like American audiences? Like what kind of show?
It was
you?
Called Wacky World. It was actually the greatest experience of my life. It's so lame, and I know it's going to haunt me. But the show was called Wacky World Beaters, and it was me and this girl called Amberly Lobo, and we represented Australia.
Uh-huh.
So we put on like Aussie team tracksuits, and we went all around the world and competed in silly events like the World Air Guitar Championships in Oulu, Finland, or sumo wrestling in Japan. Nagasaki speed eating, pumpkin racing in Germany. So we did like 20 sports. So my first job in show business, man, was like I went to like 25 countries.
So you did travel?
For 6 months.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's great. I thought it was just like in the set.
So my manager called me and he goes, oh, there's this a kids show thing. You probably wouldn't be interested. And I was like, I don't know if I want to be a kids entertainer. He was like, it's like 40 grand. You got to go on a plane right now to Sydney and they're having an audition for like to the host.
Okay.
And I went in. With, like, I'm not getting this. There's no way.
Which is the best way to.
And I didn't want it. So I was so calm coming in. Yeah. We went down to Bondi Beach and they had like 6 kids and everyone had an ice cream and there was all the 4 different male hosts and they were all.
And you were
beautiful.
Like, you want to hear a joke? Yeah. An Australian?
And everyone was beautiful. They were like TV hosts. And I was like, I'm not getting this.
Yeah.
And it was like a ice cream eating competition was like the made up game.
Okay.
And the male model who was on before me was like, ooh. oh, it's cold. And he's like, oh, it's a sometimes food. Like he was trying
no
to
no personality.
That. And so I was like, okay, I know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to be like a big mess. So they're like, 3, 2, 1. And I got the ice cream. I smashed it on my head. And then I stole the other kid's ice cream. And I'm just like, come and get the ice cream back. I'm bigger than you. And I ate their ice cream.
That's fine.
And the kids were laughing.
Yeah.
I literally did that for 3 minutes. I said to the lady, the producer, I said, hey, it was a real pleasure. I got to fly here. I think I got like 20 points on Qantas Airways and it was free.
That's awesome.
And I got to see Sydney Beach and I was like, good luck making your show.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll never see each other
again. And the lady's like, I won him.
No, I got a call from my agent when I got to the airport.
What the fuck did you do? That was great.
He's like, you've got the show. Do you have a passport? You start in 2 weeks.
Wow, that's amazing.
And that was a reminder to me of like, no one is interested in a person who wants the job.
That's exactly. That's
I wish I could have that energy for everything else.
Dude, that's exactly what I tell everybody and I tell myself all the time, because especially because of stuff that we want, you know, when you get that email or whatever and like, and you're like, oh, I want this. That's the kind of attitude to
and
fucking be like,
every time.
Like, yeah, you basically negged them.
I negged them into giving me the job.
You negged them. And made them.
Because people want, because that's also, that's a human thing. We all are, what do you, like, if you're even like hitting on a girl or whatever, what do you like? You want somebody that's kind of like, doesn't give a shit about you. Because you're like, wow, what is this person?
I'll win you.
Yeah, like I'll win you. You don't want to somebody to be like, I love you, I like you. It's like, you get like that. And like, we can't do that for jobs or shit.
So I did the show and it was amazing. I remember thinking like, this is my TV career. It was 2013. I was like, this is be my life now, you know. There'll be multiple seasons.
Yeah,
did first season.
Did you have
canceled.
To do like Disney like character?
So,
guy,
a little bit. Like, and my persona was much like darker. And we flew to London, and the first thing they made us do was we went to Hyde Park, and it's packed with people. And as a trial run, they go, "All right, we're just going to do like a loosening up sketch between you two." And my co-host, Amberly, is one of the best kids presenters I've ever seen. She's just Nickelodeon. Like, she was born from the slime of Nickelodeon.
God.
She just emerged out of green slime.
Out of the machine.
Like, perfect for that.
Right. And so they go, okay, we're going to do air guitar. You've got to busk, and whoever gets the most money air guitaring, go up to, like, cute girls and dudes and stuff and be like, and she was straight into it.
Mm-hmm.
And because she's so enthusiastic, it worked so well, and everyone, she looked great on camera. And I kept negging like, oh, I broke a string. Like, because I was just embarrassed.
I didn't
know how to be. I wasn't a clown.
Yeah,
I was a person who would mock things. And
exactly.
And I just was shit telly. I was bombing.
Mm.
Not, like, it wasn't working. Even the camera guys were like, you're making kids TV. Like, what do you mean you broke a string?
I don't know how to play.
You know, I'd be like,
can't see the irony of this.
And I'm doing a kid show, and yet I'm making jokes where, like, I turn my back, and I'm like, I'm Bob Dylan. Like, I don't...
And
kids are like, who's Bob Dylan?
I'm like,
it's a good joke.
Yeah.
And so I go back to the hotel and I get a knock on the door and it's the executive producer. Mm. And she goes, are we going to have a problem?
Oh.
I've flown you to London to make this show and it's a great opportunity. And if you are going to be like that, if you can't do the show, tell me now. We'll give you a ticket to go home tomorrow.
Oh.
Ooh.
Wow. And I was like, I called my dad and everything. I was like, oh, I can't do it. And he's like, mate, just fucking...
Just
have a couple beers.
Yeah.
Just like loosen up.
Yeah.
And so I
you got to smash the ice cream on your face.
Exactly.
Dude,
like when
you did it in your audition.
That's a good analogy.
But in the audition, I knew no one was going to see it. But all I could think of was every stand-up comedian that I was friends with were like, you're a fucking kid show entertainer.
Which is who gives a shit. Right. But like, but in that, I know what I've been through that too.
And I couldn't break out of it. I ended up doing it. I loosen up through the show. It's fine. Okay.
Yeah.
And so then... You know, the show was hardly seen by anyone. It was like, whatever. It ends up not being renewed for a season because it was the most expensive kids show in Australian TV history.
Yeah, you're traveling all over the world. Yeah.
And they were like, it's really not worth making another one of these.
I want to be like when the actual studio president went to the executive producer and be like, so are we going to have a problem with this? And he's like, it's like, you're fine.
And so they canned it. But at that point, I was like, oh, I'm a celebrity person. Like, I'm... in the media now. Like, I've done one kid show, but I was like,
pop
this is my life now, you know? So,
were you able to be doing stand up at the same time?
I was doing stand up.
Stop when you do a
kid's show. Well, it was a government
show.
It was ABC. So, made me sign a contract where I changed my name on the TV show. I was William Gill because they didn't want kids to turn up to my stand up where I was talking about sex, drugs. I was talking about like being a cokehead while I was working on a kid's television. So, they were like, we have to. So, I was Silly Gilly or William Gill.
Okay.
So, that show's done. And then, exact same story, this radio company are like, you're the future of like youth radio in this city of Adelaide, right? Uh-huh. And I went in for the interview, and again, I didn't want to work on commercial radio, even though it was paid really good money. I was like, this isn't for me. I don't want to do commercial radio, like be the silly morning guy. I meet with the CEO of the company. He dropped $50 out of his pocket, and I dived on the floor. I picked up the $50, and I was like, success. I was like, that's all I wanted. I got $50 out of this. You'll never hire me. My manager was there. I was like, let's get the fuck out of here. We've won the deal. I was like, you'll never have me in your station, and I get lunch out of this. And same thing, I left, and the guy calls me. He's like, you're the guy for us to do radio. Wow. And they're the only two jobs I've ever won, and they're the only ones I didn't want to fucking do. Fuck. And I did that radio show for like 5 years.
Wow.
And that's where I like made a, you know, a name. Not even a name, but that's where I like, I bought a house and like, it gave me the confidence to be like, I don't have to be a lawyer. I'll do stand up and radio. Got it.
That's my career. Like you find a career niche.
That's what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
You know, but then I had to get up every day, 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. and do the 3-hour radio show.
Yeah. But you were still doing, that also led you to then do your stand up gigs and bring people to, because they knew you from the radio show or something.
100%. And I was like, oh, I got immigrant parents like you. I got a Croatian mother. And the fact that I'm on billboards, it was like, they weren't bothering him anymore about why would you want to do stand up?
Exactly. Now they saw okay, this is not a little dream, this is real. You know?
Oh, to have a mother who is so unsupportive of your career, and fair enough, who's just like, stand-up comedy is an embarrassment, and there was an amazing day where she was stuck going to work, and a train went past with like our morning radio show, and then she called me, and she was like, oh, you know.
Okay, yes.
All right.
Yeah.
So
or she probably go like, but that picture.
you're fat.
There's
that my mom's brutal.
My mom is the same, but like she's never, like I remember like one time, the first time I did like I got a Netflix show and I had like first speaking role thing and like, and I sent it to her. I'm like, my mom, and then she came. And then the first thing that she said to me was like, how come you only have one line? I was like, fuck. It's like, it's hard to fucking, who cares
can't we
about,
be excited about
like,
that?
And I was like, you know, but that's what it is. That's what they always look at. They never want to tell
it's
you
never
great.
Enough.
Nah, yeah, that's kind of like the same thing, you know. But that's awesome. I mean, that's, and then, so then after that.
So that's based out of Adelaide.
Yeah, so
well.
I just did that for like 5 years. And then,
because we always love to know, like, when you have to make a move, like, as when obviously you outgrew Adelaide, right? But where do you go as a stand up if you're an Australian based stand up?
So I was, the stand up, I'd travel around, so I didn't have to live in Adelaide to do the show. Like,
you
could tour and you do it down the line or whatever. But then I started opening for Jim, and then Jim was like, man, you got to get out of here.
Oh, he's already
like,
right?
And he was like, you should come to it, I'll help, you know, sponsor
you. He was already here in the US.
He was already here. He was like a big star, and he was like, you can do it. I'll help you out. But he's like, next time I come on tour in Australia, if you're still here, we're done. Like, I don't want you to, you won't open for me again. Because you got to like take the next step, which is the best thing.
That's great.
Holy cow.
To do. But then you do go like, okay, a good big salary and a reasonably good life. Like, you know, my life was like, I'm on the radio. I got money.
You have
eat
status.
For free at restaurants. My favorite sporting team. I get to sit in the player's box. You know what I mean? I'm like walking around high-fiving the players before they go out. You're like,
Big fish in little Adelaide.
And like, there's a lot of talk about being the big fish in a small pond, and they say it negatively. Fuck that. Being a big fish, the smaller the pond, the better.
Yeah. I mean,
it
depends on the pond. It depends on a lot of things,
now,
man.
Now I'm an algae in the ocean, and it ain't good. It's a horror.
Yeah, it's a big-ass pond here.
Oh, fuck. It's not a pond. It's an ocean. It's like, this is a fucking...
Yeah.
We're in the... I mean,
I'm
that's
like
the thing.
Kelp that a whale is like gonna pick up. Like, I'm nothing, and it sucks.
It's
the drop in the ocean.
That's what I'm saying. Like I was saying, like for you guys, when somebody, because I learned, I didn't have any of that. I just started here in this big ass ocean. So like, I don't know anybody, but it's hard. I think. I mean, I don't know if I would have done. If I would have already had a career or something like that, maybe I would have.
But legitimately, because I love stand up more than any. Like that's what I love. I remember. Like, I'd watch, like, Joe Rogan podcasts, and you'd talk about the Comedy Store. And I would come here on holidays, and I was like, fuck. I did think, if you can't be funny here in America, because this is, like, the home of comedy, I was like, then you're a fraud. And whatever small life you've built for yourself here and you think you're doing well, you got to go to where the best are to try and match it. Otherwise, you're a coward.
Exactly.
And so that's why I came to America. I was like, I wonder how I can actually go.
Mm.
And you took that challenge on. Faster than moving to, you didn't think Sydney or Melbourne?
No, because my life was just like, once you move out of your home, you might as well go to the biggest place.
Right.
Because like, if you go to another bigger city in your town, in your country,
You're still in the country.
You're still away from your family and your home, and yet you're not at the end goal. So, like, just go big.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I always said that, too. Like, my thing is, like, you got to move. If you want to be the best, you got to move to where the best is. I always say, like, if you want to be in finance, go to New York. If you want to be in fashion, go to Paris. And here was fucking L.A., you know. And then L.A. or New York, standard-wise. But I also moved L.A. because I grew up in D.C., and I was like, it's kind of the same thing. I was like, I know it's 4 hours from D.C. I know I'm going to be too close. I'm going to be in my building. It's like, I need to move as far as I back so I really fucking can't. You know, I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? So it's
forcing ourselves. I find it pretty natural as a stand-up, too. You move to the city that you can get on stage every night, which you can't.
Yeah. Which I got to eat.
Smaller ponds. You can't get on stage all the time. So, like, London, I remember when I moved to London, I was like, I was doing two shows on a Tuesday night. So it was
My problem coming here was, though, is I came along and thought I would immediately just, I was like, well, you know, you back yourself as a comedian. I'll just be on here. My life will be, I'm on the stall like every night.
Mm.
Yeah. And so I moved so naively, just like, this is what it will be.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I go, oh, fuck, there needs to be influences for what it's going to really be like. Because then you go into like some bucket mic or some shit thing, and then your confidence starts to seep where you're like, I'm not at this level, am I? And then you're starting to bomb because everyone bombs in the room. And then you're like, do I suck now?
It's like a holding, you're like in a holding pattern when you move.
That's why my
like
thing for the Comedy Store, I don't know if you guys want to take this on board, but
sure.
I watched the Comedy Store the other night and with some Aussie friends. And I,
what do you mean you watch?
We just went and watched some shows.
Oh, shows here. Okay.
And you know, you guys are paid regulars or whatever, and it's very hard to get in. My new model is, I think a foreign comedian should be able to challenge a paid regular for their spot.
Ah, that's funny.
like King of the Hill.
You like that?
I like that. I think that's pretty badass.
Yeah, because I was like, some of these people look like they're taking this club for granted. I was like, look, man, this guy's up here bombing. He's been here. I come and watch now, and I'm like, they don't even seem excited. They're in like a hoodie. They're like chilling in the hallway. I'm like, man, if I was getting up tonight, I'd be like, I'm going to rip this fucking crowd. Mm. And I go, there should be like a card, and you put down your paid regular card. And I'm like, let's fucking go, man.
Let's go.
Main room tomorrow night. What do you got?
I like that. By the way, I wouldn't participate in that because I'm an immigrant and also a paid regular. So I'm like, you fight amongst you. I'll just judge. I'll be like, yes. I'll be Caesar. No, but like,
you know, that Don
that's
Ward,
better than roast
Don,
battle to me.
Don
I mean, it's
going to
it's kind of like a roast battle. It is kind of like a thing.
Don Ward, who owned the Comedy Store in London, he used to do that to knew if an open spot was coming through and doing the tryout spots. He used to pull them into his office and say that, go, here's my roster. Who do you think I should knock off my roster to give you a chance? And every new comic is like, you know, you're more humble and you're like oh, bang. I'd want you to bring me on, you know, because I'm me. I don't want to. But now this is the maturity. But, now you look at that roster go that person
but then
doesn't
that also give you actually more confidence to be like, oh yeah, I can be a regular here, I can do all this stuff, you know?
Yeah,
like,
but
what I mean,
it's another thing where I think you move to another country and it isn't even about how good you are at stand-up, it's about even getting the opportunity for people to see.
Yes
you know, it's tough, and I don't blame anybody because it's like, this is where everyone comes from, and you can be a real bitch about it. Well, I can, where I'm just like, but it's like, think about a booker, how many people they have
exactly. And also it's like,
I'm like, haven't you seen Wacky World Beaters in 2013? I was a kid star.
I mean, it's just like, because I got other friends who also moved from other countries who they're huge in their countries, but now they had to also, you know, and like, you know, they also had to do open mic, get to know each other and all this stuff. And now, like, but they, it's kind of like, the thing about it is, like, once you're already good as a comic, it's like, it's going to be faster for you because you're already good comic. But you do have to go through the process a little bit.
Man, one of my best friends has a saying, I don't care what industry you're in, it works. Just taking ownership of your own life, which is, he always says, in today's day and age, like, there is no such thing as an undiscovered genius anymore. You have all the tools to get your stuff out.
Exactly.
And it's now like, it's your fault.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you're not known, and if you really are great, in capitalism,
people will share.
Someone will, if you are truly great, you will be exploited for money.
Exactly.
So like, that's one great thing about America. It's like, if you actually get to the level, someone will go, I can give him a really bad contract, fuck him over, get him famous, and take all his money.
Exactly. I use it the example.
It's a fair system.
Opportunity.
Fucking Elvis, a movie, that kind of example. That guy. But like, I take the example too of like, just like with sports, you know, like when they get like this Brazilian soccer players from favelas, they don't have nothing, and they fucking, they're like, that guy's good, I'm gonna fucking bring him to fucking Barcelona and explore, you know, like, so it's like, yeah, it is that thing, especially now with social media and everything, you can put everything online, and if you're good, and one of the things that I learned from being a finance major and all that stuff, in terms of marketing, the first better, the best marketing thing is word of mouth.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you're good, people will share. People share two things.
Do you know
when
what else
really
is good?
Good and when you're really bad.
Really good. You know, I'll tell you what else is good for marketing.
What?
If you're Rick Caruso and you spend $100 million to become the
manager. Yeah, yeah.
Imagine if you spent $100 million to become a bigger comedian. How do you think you'd go?
But it'd be bad if you fucking don't, then if you don't.
Because even if you've got shit material, it's like you just spend $100 million and people will be like, oh, okay, that's a bad clip.
Yeah, that's true.
Would you make your own special?
It's like $3 billion.
A five-camera shoot with drones. And...
Well, it was $2 billion at the other night on Powerball, and I was like, with $2 billion,
I know.
What could you make?
Yeah, fuck.
You could buy Netflix and be like, I get a special.
Exactly,
here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. But that's one thing where it always go, like, when you're like, when you're good, you're good. And if you're not good, it doesn't matter who your dad is or how much money you have. You ain't gonna
look. Only 7 and 8 out of 10s. Because there are people. This is the unfair nature of the system. There are people who are 7, 8 out of 10 talent, who for some reason get lucky. They know the right people. The zeitgeist is right. Diversity is at the right time, and so they get to succeed.
Yeah.
But and you could be like also an 8 out of 10. You go, oh, this is bullshit. Like, why am I going? I'm as good as that guy. But if you're a 10 out of 10, you're successful.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you got to spend your time trying to become a 10 and stop being a whinging 7.
Mm. Yeah. But what happened if you just can't be a 10?
Yeah, well, if you can never be a 10,
but you can still
you
be
run a
successful.
Comedy course.
No, but I do feel. But
those
I do
who
feel.
Can't teach.
No, but I do feel like in this industry, because I know, like, since I started this thing, it's like sometimes it's better to be a 7 out of 10 or an 8 out of 10 with a fucking drive 20 out of 10 than being the 10 out of 10 that doesn't have that drive and that work ethic. Because
sure.
They will be the other person will be more successful because this other person doesn't. They're talented, but they don't have the fucking
the
drive
value
or the
of
work.
Networking and
yeah,
having
and
that outside
that
drive
yeah.
is. Huge.
It's smart. I mean, you still have to be good, but if you have that plus that, fuck. And then if you have the combination of like you have your 10 out of 10 and then you have the drive and everything, then that's where you become.
I want to be an aristocrat. Like, what I would rather do, I don't want to make a living out of comedy. I think it poisons it. I would like to be independently wealthy. I want like $1 billion in the bank. And I'm like Lord Byron. You know how like old English billionaires and aristocrats would do arts on the side?
Yeah.
Like they'd write poetry? Like, wouldn't it be great if you just had the money and stand up as this pure artistic pursuit that you do?
Man.
And they're like,
well,
this guy drives a Lamborghini here and does the same five that he's perfecting because he just likes jokes.
Yeah.
Like, don't you
I don't want to have to get on a
lose the drive though. Don't you think in that case?
No, because I feel like you're doing it. Well,
because it's about the status of knowing you're great at your art.
Yeah. Oh, so you're still...
I'd be dead from heroin.
It's not going to go that way.
I'll do a bucket mic.
I just won the lottery and the dealer's on the way over.
But I do see, I mean, do you see other people that are now do comedy that didn't start as comedians or didn't get famous as comedians and now they're doing stand-up, which is kind of like that, where like now I want to do it because I always like doing it, but now I don't need to do it for the money. I'm just doing it because I want to. You know, there's people like that.
Like John Mayer, you mean?
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's like an example.
Stand-up around town.
I mean, he does, I mean, yeah, but like that, yeah, that's an example of like, he's like, dude, I don't need to.
Judd Apatow, he's
Judd Apatow is a good example.
I watched him the other night. He's just like, and then he's got so many people sucking up to him, and they're like, that was the greatest set ever. And you're like, yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, and but he's like, yeah, he's just doing it because he like, but he's already.
Dude, my
done,
friend did the funniest thing.
Already cracked it.
My friend Wolfie is a comedian from Australia, and all these people were like, Judd, that was amazing, man. That was a great set. And Wolfie goes, to be honest, man, I thought it was pretty soft. It could have done with some work. And Judd Apatow was like, thank you. Like it was a breath of fresh air.
But this is what
these people
going back to the beginning of your story about, you know, the ice cream thing. Because it's like, your friend is like, I don't give a shit. You're not like, but it's true. It's better to be like, Judd, that was bad. I mean, like, you could work better. I think that could be better. But like, we want to be in the next movie. So we're like, yeah, that was good.
And
like,
I hate that feeling of being the moment that you go like, man, I'm being a suck up. And I'm
I hate that shit. Yeah.
Is that not the dirtiest feeling?
But this is why.
Hey, man, good set.
This is one of the reasons of like, I feel like in my case, I could have advanced quicker if I would have that, but I just can't. Like I can't be friends with somebody if I just don't like, if I don't like you, I'm gonna be respectful for you, but I'm not gonna suck up to you just because I know you can get me a job or something. I can't do that. I can't just be that.
And you can't do the 10 social occasions in one night. I see those people in LA a lot.
Oh, well,
like,
I know ever, you're
just, they're just, and
they don't even look, they're talking to you and they're like this. They're like, yeah, so yeah. Like, they're not even listening. They're like, just, okay, hold on a second. And then they go, they see somebody.
I put in my 5 minutes and then they're off the next
one. Wouldn't it be great if you could just...
Everybody notices. If you are one of those people, we all notice.
But at least if you're a woman who wants to be an actress, you just know you got to fuck this one guy. There's no one in comedy that I can do that to. You know what I mean? Like, if I wanted...
You think that's the cheat code?
If there was a big cock that I could just shove to the back of my throat instead of having to listen to some guy talk about his podcast, I would put that dick in the back of my throat and drown on his gym.
Wow. All right.
But there isn't anybody.
I think there is.
Don't worry.
Bring Don Barris in here.
With that announcement, I think we're gonna get a lot of
DMs about it. You know.
Oh my god, I would honestly taste a man's seed to get up at Flappers regularly. Give me something.
Abel Skill, ladies and gentlemen, he's available in town all month.
Don't you think some acting stars that we know of? Not we know of, but that's rumors that, you know, like Tom Cruise or something. You know, like people like that. I don't know. Like,
yeah, but that's what I'm saying is I think it's better to just get one big dirty sexual favor out of the way rather than having 400 annoying conversations.
So wouldn't you feel dirty about that? About your success?
I would feel more dirty knowing that I pretended to give a shit talking about the Dodgers with some guy in the car park here.
Okay.
Well, I'm like, oh yeah. Well, cool.
But you're feeling.
When I could have just got it out of the way.
You're just like, what? I'm not so dirty.
So you equate one dick in your mouth to 20 hours of useless conversation.
Absolutely.
That equals one dick.
Ask any of those actresses.
I'll take the 20-hour conversation.
I know. I've had about 400 hours of useless conversations now, and by your math, that's. That's a good. That's
Harvey Weinstein's dick now.
I've had 20 dicks.
Where it's not even.
Shit.
It can't even do anything for you.
And it didn't even work out.
Yeah. How do you know that the person's gonna follow up after you did the dirty shit? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's why you're just gonna be a. You just gotta be a whore. you gotta enjoy it for the art of sucking dick. You know, you can't be in it for the results. You gotta be in it for the journey.
Because what happened if you do that shit and then you're like, fuck, it's been a year and I'm still like, what happened? I fucked that guy and like, nah.
It's a great Oscar speech.
Right?
All I'm doing is knocking dicks out of my mouth, and I haven't gotten anywhere with my career.
Shit.
Turns out I approached it wrong.
Wow.
Well, this is that's a good. That's
so yeah, point, good point is, I was a kid's TV star.
Fuck. And then, we got 10 more minutes, but
let's talk travel.
This is what we do. We talk about one thing, and then we go on tangents.
The shit, but I do want to. Are you gonna ask
one question about not traveling, just being? I mean, because you travel a lot. You say you travel a lot
all the time. Yeah.
So and all over the world. What's the best country or best city that you like? Have you been there, and also that you like performing in, or that you know?
Well, I mean, just for travel, because I've got the Croatian background, I'm a big European. I love to go around Europe.
Of course,
I can't go past particularly as a history nerd who like the classics and stuff, the classics universe. Mm-hmm. Anything to do with ancient Greece, Rome. I'm in for the ruins.
I love that too.
I'm an architecture. That's where I get into the real snobby.
Are you one of those guys that when you go because you see when I was in Rome last year or you go to the museums, you know, there's people that stare for hours to the painting or this stuff. Are you those guys that you're like, because I go I pretend, all right, I got enough.
You don't have to absorb the whole thing.
No, I mean, there's people that are they just see. I'm like, okay, I got it.
I learned that I'm more of a fan of architecture than the art, because any gallery I'm in, I'm more interested in those steps, man. Look at the banisters.
Look at the emergency exit.
Mona Lisa, he gives a fuck.
Yeah.
But I'll be like, dude, look at this building. Yeah,
I kind of feel that way too. When you're in these great museums, you feel like you're really in the presence of something.
But you can go by yourself and just kind of
stare
for hours.
I like to go and do that. I like to, anywhere I travel, I'm a big fan of get on the bike. Well, when I used to be able to run, you go run around the city, look at the buildings, get a bit of a feel for it.
And this is what you do too while you're performing, or just, or is that different?
Like, no, if I try and do, even in America, I go around these towns with, like, you know, JJ and Jim and Forrest and this crew, and everyone just wants to stay in the hotel.
Yeah.
But I guess because they've done it for so long, but I'm just like, fuck, man, there's a Bass Pro World shop here.
Yeah, let's just check it out. Yeah.
I heard there's an NRA museum.
Yeah.
So I just wonder, like, since you guys travel so much for your comedy, is that the reason why you like to travel? Or is that something that you already think that you would have been doing, traveling around the world?
Man, I absolutely, traveling for your job makes you realize how much you enjoy it.
Yeah.
But there is a, I think you get ruined. Well, I don't want to be, I like the perpetual motion. Like I said, I don't like to be, anytime I stay anywhere, I realize that I've chosen a life of not building a beautiful home life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better to keep seeing new.
Got it.
Because what's back at home?
Then you're like,
I haven't built the picket fence.
Exactly.
Keep moving forward.
Just go.
Don't look back.
But it's like, it's kind of like the Seinfeld story about this opera's band that gets stung, you know, like in the winter.
They look in and they see the family eating the turkey and they go, ugh, how do
we can live like that? So,
but I mean, I just like every part of the travel. I like to get off the plane, I drive in, I look around the city, I think, oh, this is pretty. Oh, that's a nice building. That's a good church. One of these. You get to the hotel. This is the crisp sheets.
Mm.
You get the room service. You get the good shower. Okay, you unlay all your stuff. You walk around. You just feel like you've got a new, fresh life. Mm. If I have a home, I'm filthy and messy.
Yeah.
My hotel room is constantly neat.
Yeah.
And I'm not there long enough to sully it with my filth. And then I'm away again.
Once it's going to start getting dirty, you go.
2 days, you leave.
Yeah.
And that's someone else's job who's a low-paid immigrant. You go, you worry about that, not me.
Yeah.
I like to have a trip in the city, too, just to get to know something about the city. I went and saw when I was in Arkansas last weekend, I went and saw the Razorbacks play because they're big into their college football.
Mm-hmm.
It was my first ever college football game, but I'm glad I went for the day. You know, it was
to get the experience.
It's about 40 minutes away from the club kind of thing. But great experience. They didn't score at all. They got shut out by a weak team, which gave me plenty of fuel for jokes about them, like later on, like that night at the show. So that's always good. I mean, I like to try to take in something.
And I think I'm fucking Anthony Bourdain sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, because I love Bourdain.
You do a lot of
dining.
Like, there are times where I'm like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to try a chicken asshole because it's what the locals do. And then there's other times where you're like, you know, I'm just, is there McDonald's?
Yeah, exactly.
I just
want to
fly.
Yeah.
I'm like, it gets exhausting to constantly immerse yourself. You know, I don't need to try all the cultures. I'm pretty happy with mine sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. I think it depends. I'm the same way too. Depends on the schedule. Like if I'm in and out, I'm like, yeah, I'm not gonna go all out and figure it out. But if I'm there for like 3 or 4 days, yeah, I'll fucking go out and do something. Because I think you have to. And you can't just stick. I think it's like you have to also enjoy the process of being a comedian and traveling. I mean, like, you can't just, I don't think you can just be stuck in like, okay, I got to do this.
But the problem with travel,
depends on how hungover I am, too.
No. Travel ruins you in many ways. What it has for me is because I've seen so many different, like, I've got family who are like farmers in Australia. I've got family who live in the mountains of Croatia. I see people who, like, I've got a cousin who has a bar in the Mediterranean. I got my brother lives in Canada in the ski mountains. And I look at all these people living these beautiful lifestyles and I'm like, I want to do that. But then I go, oh no, but I also want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is when you're a traveler, all you do is you immerse yourself in the life of people who are living their dreams. And you share them for 2 days and then you have this overwhelming sadness, which is, I will never have any of these because I'm a drifter between the lives of all these other people. Yeah. And so you have to then go, well, what I am is I am a chameleon who tries to take on the happiness and stability of other people, but I will never have that. So I simply exist as a guest between worlds. But
is this a children's show? I feel like this is the story after a children's show and the kids are going.
Dude, I'm a fucking dude. I'll go to Italy and I'm like, I'm just going to be a fisherman here.
Yeah.
And that's all my life. And day three, I'm like, there's not good titties in this town.
Yeah. No, I'm the same way.
Permanent tourist.
But I feel like I agree with that, but I feel like it's fine to be like, enjoy that. Like, you don't have to feel like, this is what I like to do. You know, like, I live in the ocean. I can't do this for the rest of my life. So I respect the people that do it, but I can't just, so it's fine to be like, I'm happy. I respect that, but I'm like, I'm happy with me traveling all over the world.
But I'm jealous of those. What I've learned from travelers, I'm jealous of people who are a character. Like they're a unique individual and they live this life and they're happy with that. And I wish that I knew what that was for me, but I don't have that yet.
It's funny because I was the opposite.
No set thing.
It's funny because for me, I came from the opposite. I feel like I was one of those people where it was like, oh, I'm going to be the rest of my life doing this. And then finally, when I realized I'm going to do the comedy, it's kind of like I was not blind anymore. And I'm like, no, and then now I see those people and I respect that. I mean, to me, I respect people that, hey, this is what I like to do. I'm happy doing that. But then I go like, yeah, I can't do that. I respect that, but
my family grew up in this town called Renmark, right? My farming family. It's like a town, and my family all farm. And I've got cousins who have never left the town. You know, it's like a small farming town. And when I was younger, I was like, man, these guys, how ignorant are they?
Mm-hmm.
They spend every day, they go up the creek, they get hammered with their friends. They've known the same people their entire life. They do the exact same thing. The schedule's exactly the same. But every time I see them, they're happy.
Yeah.
They're really happy. And I think with my brain, because I've seen so much stuff, I go, how could you live in this town farming almonds? Yeah. What is wrong with you? But then meanwhile, I'm in like Missouri in a hotel by myself eating like something out of a vending machine. I'm so alone. And I'm like, if only they could experience this.
But they
hold on to their grudges too. A lot of I think of that when I go home to see some of my friends who have been like, you know, friends, same place, same town forever. In fact, one of them went to a wedding with me in Mexico 2 years ago and had to get his passport. Had never been out of Canada yet. It's like, what Mexico going to be like? So it's very simple life, but they still hold on to old grudges as well. Whereas I think we just let everything go. I think comedians, you have to reboot every week, every time you go to a new town.
No, but I feel like you do. I think it's like, my thing is also, it's like how, it depends on how ambitious you are as an individual. Like for me, I would wish I wasn't as ambitious and I could just live in a beach and just eat, you know, fish my own fish and surf and that's it. But I know myself, I know like after a week I'd be like, all right, I gotta write something, I gotta produce I wanna fucking become big, you know what I mean?
Now,
longest you can go on holiday for before you start thinking about your job again?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, like, cause like when I last one that I did that was big was in when I went to Italy and I wore, you know, that was like 10, 11 days. But it was different because I actually made the choice of like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not going to worry that much about work. I'm going to enjoy it. Right. And I really enjoyed it. I wasn't thinking about work or whatever, you know, I was just like really enjoying it. So it was like, I think it's more of like a state of mind of like, you know what, fuck it. I'm not going to think about it.
But you said 10, 11 days.
I could go, cause... I think after like maybe like a month at most of like just traveling, and doing a lot of stuff, I'd be like, all right, I got to get back to work.
For me, I'm in the worst IQ bracket. The worst IQ bracket, right? Which is... You know, you ever feel like this where you go like, I'm too smart to and too exposed to the world to want to live a very basic life, but I'm also too dumb to actually be a truly intelligent human being. Mm. So I'm stuck in this mid zone where I'm like, I want this wonderful traveled life where I almost like this Indiana Jones existence where I'm like this professor who goes out on adventure and people seek to talk to me and I have friends all around the world and I'm this dinner guest that they go, oh, Amos is coming to town. We love when he's in town. We'll take him to a great restaurant. But ultimately, I want the travel. I'm not that smart. I'm not that interesting. I know that I don't want to be a guy in a small hick town. So what I really want is someone to hit me in the head and so I lose 15 IQ points. Because you can't get smarter, but you can get dumber. So it's like, I want to drink myself into oblivion or have some kind of accident where I'm just like, I like the Adelaide Crows Football Club and I like my boys. And we get fucked up on Friday and we play fantasy football. That's what I want, because I'm never going to be Stephen Hawking. I'm stuck in some mid zone where I'm too proud to be a hometown hick. And I'm too dumb to be anything.
So you're looking for a head injury.
I'm looking for a head injury. I'm looking for some concussions. I want CTE.
I feel this is like a pitch of a movie.
He's really streamlined his life lately. He got hit by a Tesla. I think,
isn't this the movie with like Sandra Bullock while he was sleeping? You know, while you were sleeping. I think it was like, you got to do that, fall into a coma, wake up, just be like, wow, I'm not.
This version would be, now you are sleeping. That would be the difference. Just pick your small town and go there and drink your face. I mean, yeah, my brother is raising a family and he lives down the road from my parents. So my parents get to see their grandkids all the time. And my brother's got a nice, simple, like, good job. He works at the hospital. And sometimes I am like, this must be nice. Nice and predictable. Takes his kids to soccer.
But to me, it's like, it all depends of like, if you're happy with that. Because I feel like what I get mad or not mad, but I get like, is when people like complain, it's like, then do fucking do something about it. Because if you're happy with your, like, doing the same thing every day and doing the same job and drinking the same beer and drinking the, then it's fine, you know, but it's, you gotta be, like you said, you gotta be like, that mentality has to be like, this is what I like.
And another, that's what I was gonna say. I give it 2 weeks. So when I go home and see my family, and as much as I'm saying, like, these home lives are beautiful, my sister the same, it's great. But after 2 weeks, because sometimes I go home for 3 weeks, that third week for me, I'm just chomping at I'm like, ready. Okay, it's ready. I'm rebooted. It's time to go. It's time to get back to work and start, you know.
So then does that also, that mentality that you have, or that does it also come with relationships, like with, you know, like.
Absolutely.
Because you have to be, if you're marrying somebody, you have to be with them for them.
You know, the other sad thing that I've learned about myself now at 31 is I love the idea of this life on the road. Absolutely. But in my head, I'm this some, you know, I want to be some Kerouacian figure, some Hunter S. Thompson who goes out and has these crazy adventures. And I boldly go to a place alone and then magic happens and chaos. But the reality is I'm too shy. And that, like, I'll go, yeah, I'm going to go on the road. And you're meant to go up to strangers and ask them for drugs and then, like, meet strange women and have these crazy adventures together. Like, I've got friends who are heroin addicts who are over in Thailand, and they joined the local fucking guerrilla militia mistake because they met a guy, knew a guy. And but, like, in reality, I'm probably walking around with a podcast in going, God, I'm a traveler.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm eating dinner alone, watching these people live this crazy life. And I'm like, man, I'm not even traveling. Can I at least, if I'm going to have no family, can I just take the wild drugs and have the experiences? Yeah. But I'm like, instead of having this open attitude, like, wow, that guy could be fun to hang out with, I'll look at him and be like, he looks annoying.
Yeah, that, to me, that's personality. I think, sometimes I wish I would go, like, yeah, like, back in the 50s, like, even, like, with, like, Sinatra and Rat Pack, like, they're drinking, smoking, fucking with, nobody was thinking about diseases or anything about it. It's, like, all this stuff, and I'm like, yeah, but that was, like, also having that ignorance of not even knowing. Like, now I know, so now it'd be, and I'm that person. I know, like, you have to have that personality. I'm the paranoid, semi-hypochondriac guy that's like, yeah, I'm not gonna go into, I'm always thinking about, like, if I do this, you know. So you have to have the personality of, like, and I have friends that are like, no, just fucking, let's just, and they just go into this, and like, what, you fucking did that? It's like, yeah, fucking, and I don't have that.
Right.
And it's like, you have to have that in order to go into these journeys of, like, yeah, dude, I ended up in a fucking, you know.
Yeah, I sometimes write stories where, like, I'll go out and then I see all these opportunities. Like, I remember I was in Mexico and I was, like, by myself. And I was hammered and I saw some, like, birthday party. So I went to the birthday party and I kind of got involved in some local, like, some family dance.
Yeah.
But then I got shy again where I was like, I shouldn't be here. I left. But then I'll go home and then I'll write a story about what could have happened. And I'll be like, that's the stage.
Yeah.
And then you just live like, I'm a coward. I could have done all these great adventures.
Yeah.
But the reality was, I was like, it was kind of hot. They didn't seem as fun in reality. And there was, like, a movie I wanted to watch at the hotel.
Yeah.
So I went back to my hotel room and I wrote this nice little story.
And I got a club sandwich delivered instead of eating whatever they were fucking having.
As you're traveling around, do you ever, like, because sometimes you're in a rush to get to shows as well. Does any little bit of superstition or anything set in on you? Like, do you need certain things to happen and go smoothly? Like, do you find that you have a bad gig if you get into town late or something like that?
I like to be there for sure. I like to be there the day before.
Oh, you do that?
Yeah, right. I want to be, like, in the town on the day. I want to. I don't know. I mean, I'm just terrible at, like, coming from from the airport straight to the stage because I'm just angry. And I'm bringing some horrible energy where I'm just like, that fucking Uber job.
Too moody to make the audience laugh.
Flying spirit. I don't dig that. I don't really have any. I just, like I told you on the other episode, I am very particular about, I like to fly my airline, I like to get my points.
Yeah.
You know, but
so that's kind of like your process, I guess.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, I'm Jack Kerouac, but I also would like to be in the lounge.
Yes.
So I'm a complete fraud.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're almost out of time, so we gotta someone ask the last question.
What else? I mean, the only thing I can think of that we missed is like we didn't ask you about. Well, we got pretty much everything, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah,
we didn't talk childhood, but it's for the
we didn't talk childhood. How? Yeah, but it was like
we talk about your kids show.
Yeah, it was like a therapy session anyway.
We don't need to go.
I mean, what kind of holidays did you guys do as a child? Like, how much?
Nah, the worst kind of holidays, which was my parents were divorced. Holidays with the step parents, just horrendous.
Oh right.
Because like my mum remarried like a rich guy, and so we'd take trips on a yacht. But which is great, but you got to hear your mum get fucked on a yacht.
Oh, yeah.
So in the daytime you're like, "Oh, we're yachting," and in the nighttime you're like,
"Yeah, because that's true." Because it's very quiet in the ocean.
It's just the rocking of the boat. You're like, "That better be the tides."
And hey, if the boats are rocking, don't come a knocking.
But it's funny because when I was young, and she'd be with like rich boyfriends, I'd be like, "Oh, mum's having sex in there." And then you get older and you start to appreciate how good it is to know someone has a yacht, and you're like, "Mom, I don't hear any fucking. Like, we're not going back to motels. Yeah, he's going to leave you unless you get moving." I'm like, "Do something."
You're pimping your own mom.
Yeah. Mom's like on the couch with me, and I'm like, "What are you doing in the couch? Get into his quarters. We are not going back to travel by bus.
Go back to the C-class, the Titanic, where Leo is there."
Well, we haven't had any other guests that have had childhood travel.
And
like
did you have? You have any siblings?
Yeah, I got a brother, and then my mum remarried and had kids at 50, and they're like, so I'm 20 something years older than them.
Oh, so you're like the brother, stepbrother, uncle kind of thing.
They're like, I'm never around for them anyway. They try and like Snapchat me, and I block them.
Okay. Wow. All right. Well, you don't like them because they're
they're
gonna have some mystery to them.
They're right.
Right.
You know, and I once did a parody sketch with the Netflix logo, and I told everyone at school, "My brother's on Netflix." And it was like, it was a joke about how I'm not on Netflix.
Oh,
are they watching your kids' show?
No, man, they watch way dirtier stuff than my kids' show. Like, they just watch Mr. Beast.
Okay.
They're like, "You live with Mr. Beast in LA."
Oh, wow.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, so, but my real brother, our family holidays were, you know, I had to work on the farm. So, like, and I loved it. It was really weird. I think that's why I had conservative leanings as a kid, is because other kids, I used to love working on, like, my summer holidays because I could go work on the farm and I'd be paid, like, $10 an hour. But I worked with, like, adult farmers. So I'd be, like, driving a tractor listening to conservative talk radio.
Oh,
and you'd go back to school and everyone's like, "We went to Greece." And I'd be like, "The Australian government has been ripped off by Chinese tariffs. The wheat price right now is being ruined by these soft hilarious. Liberals in power."
Yeah.
Right.
The fuck is this
That's
kid?
Funny. Yeah. That's not similar to, like, I grew up with, like, it's more about the work part of, like, because every time my grandma, we always go to her beach house and she made us work. Like, it wasn't like, you know, we had to, like, rake leaves, wash her car, clean the thing
Your vacation was a work camp.
Yeah, it was. It's basically like that. Like, I remember my best friend came once and she put us to work and he's, like, looking at me, he's like, "It's like, I thought we were gonna go to the drink beers at the beach." It's like, I was like, "Yeah, but we have to do this first." It's
but I loved what, man. I felt like all I wanted was these old guys who worked on the farm to be like, "This kid's he's a good lad."
You wanted that approval.
He's a hard worker, this kid.
Right.
And then I was like a seller. I'd be like, my brother hated working. He'd always be like at the river, partying with his friends. And I'd be like, "How about Henry? Slack ass. Just wants to relax the entire time. He's got no bloody work ethic." And they'd be like, "You're right, mate. You've got work ethic, though." And I'd be like, "Yeah, my good boy. I ride my tractor around. I pick up the rocks.
Nice.
I just hang out with dudes talking about how much they hate their wife." I'd be like, "Yeah, she's a bitch."
Yeah.
Blending right in.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, man. Buddy, thanks a lot for hanging out with us. Before our guests always take off, we have one final question we like to ask them. And like, do you have a favorite piece of travel advice or anything that you like to pass on to people?
All right. I told you this back over there. I'll give it to you now. If you've got any status with an airline, okay, even if just if you have one, like right now I had like Qantas Australia and I was like platinum level. Email every airline a picture of your report of where you're at and go, "I've just moved to this country," or "I'm dissatisfied with the current airline I'm flying with. I fly a lot. If you status match me, I'll start to fly with you." You get a lot of rejections, but many airlines will go, "Yeah, okay, we'll give you 4 months of platinum and let's see how we go." And then you get all the advantages. You didn't even have to fly.
Wow.
That's what I did with Delta. So get on
that. I'm actually going to do that because I have I'm going to try it. Because I do. I have, like, status on one airline, so I'm going to try it.
Now the travel advice.
Of course you are.
What?
Of course you are.
Yeah, of course. You know, he's straight on. He'll be trying it within 2 hours.
Yeah, I'm still, I like that.
And meanwhile, I'm going, one do I have the most status?
You don't have status in anything.
Oh, I got status. I got, like, status with tons of them.
What
but
status
I don't,
to
but
you? Like, fucking get in that plane?
Delta, American Airlines, and
but what,
United.
What's your status? But what's your status? Like, what do you have?
Yeah,
you,
I don't even. You say you don't.
Also, and this isn't a joke.
It's such an unimportant thing.
I'm an opioid addict at times because of my many surgeries. But if you are flying any economy seat, if you have a glass of wine and two Percocet, you are first class. It is the free upgrade that is available that anyone can have.
Now, that sounds like some advice for me.
There is nobody sitting on a flatbed having a better time than the man in the middle seat at the back on Percocet. Yeah. And it's readily available.
All right.
I feel that way sometimes when I'm on edibles. I because I still had some edibles. I don't know if it's illegal to. I had them in Arkansas. I got them through to Arkansas, and that was such a novelty. My driver in Arkansas, I traded edibles for a joint with him. Had some.
See, he's on the barter system.
Yeah. What year are you in? This is like the 1800s.
Last weekend.
It's like, what are you bartering? Hey, excuse me, old chap. Can you take me to the town, nearest town? I got some edibles. It's like, what the fuck?
He pays his rent in wheat and barley.
Yeah, what the fuck?
And I was on that flight back to LA thinking I have the best. I'm in the best shape of anybody here. I felt great.
Geez.
I'm the winner. That was my wine and two Percocet.
All right.
I'm there, nicely stoned, in a window seat.
Wait, so you smoked the weed that he gave you?
Of course, yeah.
To fly, that's what you're saying?
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
That's my first class.
Thank you for having me on your pod, everybody.
No, man, thank you for, coming. I mean, obviously, again, follow your Instagram.
A bit of Amos Gill. I don't do Twitter or anything like that.
No.
Not because of Elon Musk. I have no issues with Elon Musk. I'm unsuccessful and not a great writer.
Thanks for hanging out with us, man.
Thank you.
Subscribe, follow us. Bye, hello.